to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
So good morning, Columbia. Oh my goodness, all those joining us today. I'm really excited to be in self-contemplation with you. I mean, the songs that Jesse sang, that first one totally woke me up. I had to really listen. And the second one said, stillness is the way. Isn't that it? We have to listen. Oh, Jesse, you're quite something. So yes, we get to be in self-contemplation together. And continue to address those basic principles of the science of mind and spirit teachings. In this, our month's theme, healthy, wealthy, and wise. Ah, I so love this teaching. It allows me to be whatever I want to be, whenever I want to be it. You know, it doesn't suggest that I become positive when I'm feeling negative, but it hands me a blend of scientifically proved practices, buoyed up by spiritual principles and a universal natural law to use if I choose. Now, this teaching does not boast it is the only way, but it does state that there is a power for good in this universe, and we can use it if we choose to. So we join in spiritual community this morning to continue our understanding of how to mindfully use this power for good in the highest and best way for our lives, therefore producing goodness to benefit all. I truly believe we are moving in a time when we as people can only know ourselves as creation itself. No longer is there a God and I, but simply and truthfully, I am. So looking at this relationship of healthy, wealthy, and wise reinforces the source existing within as in each one of us, so that we can always be mindful that there is that next step to take in being the source of our own abundant living. Being the source of our own abundant living. So with this in mind today, we explore this idea of God's gold, meaning that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. There's only one of us. Or the highest and best for me is the highest and best for you. Now, this latter expression is taught in the science of mind philosophy as somewhat of an entry point to the end game, as it were, learning to be love through loving the self. In this moment now, what we consider the highest and best for ourselves, of course, changes like everything as our awareness expands and our needs and ways of walking in the world shift. So we do the best we can with the awareness we have. The term highest and best assumes, in my mind, that the decisions made on behalf of ourselves are mindful ones, and therefore filled with the consideration and kindness, as best as we know, for others in our circle we consider family, knowing that a rippling effect throughout the cosmos is happening. Now, this is happening because there's both a mystical and a scientific rippling effect happening correspondingly manifest through our decisions. So what touches, moves, calls us forward affects all and is distributed equally to all. So God's gold is very simply our inherent nature, impelled by an infinite, intelligent, creative love, operating through a universal law of being in us, which we have the freedom to think and choose to use this creative power for good. Do you remember a while back, there was a bank commercial from, I think it was Capital One, and they used to say, "What's in your wallet?" referring to whatever else you carry in your wallet other than that Capital One credit card, well, get rid of it. It's useless because all you need is Capital One. I used to love that commercial because I used to think when they said, what's in your wallet? I used to think of what's in my mind, what's in my consciousness, what's cluttering my life. And so I used to expand it. So metaphorically, for today, I'd like to use this idea, meaning what is the amount of currency or soul currency or perhaps current of consciousness you carry in your everyday offerings of exchange with life, right? Because that's what we use money for, God in action for exchange. Because what it is will by law reproduce itself energetically all over the place and within the subjective mind, universal, therefore the one mind we use, the subjective mind of the individual, of the many. And it will continue on having this rippling effect in consciousness through all eternity. It's pretty big, eh? Don't feel drowned out by that responsibility. I know we don't go there immediately, but that is the truth because there's only energy. Now, this ripple effect is based on the understanding that, of course, we're all connected, right? These connections stretch like an incredibly interwoven, complicated, complex tapestry. And each of us exists within this tapestry. Thoughts and actions are like stones dropped in that pond, and they create ripples that travel outward. Now, while we're not always conscious of the rippling effect that we create, I'm brought to the moment when I was having breakfast a couple of weeks ago when it was still warm enough to go out in my nightgown and have coffee by the water. And I would watch this, I would say young man, and he would throw those stones. You know how I used to do that when I was a kid. See how many rippling circles I could make. And he was excited. The more circles, the farther stretched his aim. You know, the more marks he hit, he was achieving, he was successful. I think everything we do and think affects the people in our lives, and their reactions in turn affect others. So yes, our choices have far-reaching consequences, and each of us carries with us the capacity to change the world in small ways, one circle at a time, for better or for worse. So we can use the principles of the rippling effect to magnify our actions and their effects just by remembering that we are doing so. So the science behind the rippling effect has come from the field of quantum physics. You know, researchers have long understood that the basic building blocks of matter, the atom, could be broken down into its basic components. So you all know we have protons, neutrons, and electrons, right? But we've come to understand that these components are not absolute unto themselves, but can be broken down into even smaller particles called leptons and quarks, which in turn can be broken down even farther. So the theory is that when you go down far enough, there is no finite bit of matter. There is only energy. So since everything is energy, our thoughts can be used to interact with that energy to affect changes in our environment. Ergo, what's in your wallet? Is it the one card, God's gold? Or is there a mishmash of sundry stuff and other distractions? So God's gold, again, our inherent nature, impelled by this intelligent, creative love, operating through a universal law of being in us, within which we have the freedom to think and choose to use this creative power for good. So when we understand the principle of the universal law of the one mind in action, we can have faith in its impersonal action and rely upon it by respecting its creative power. Just like conservationists or environmentalists respect the creative power of Mother Nature. Our reliance upon the natural environment is, I think, at the very least in our own minds, vital to our human survival, yes? You know, many choose to live off the grid. I often think if I was younger, that's where I'd be going. Now, maybe I do in mind when other people look at how I think, but I'm talking, of course, physically, right? Many choose to live off the grid. And mentally, I look at that as shifting the belief in my need to overuse and abuse the natural environment, right? To understand that a life without utilities or sundry stuff isn't so hard. If one chooses to apply best practices in relationship with the planet, life can be easier. So the planet, the natural environment, the natural spiritual laws of being in relationship with the natural spiritual laws of being. And those of us who choose to live mindfully on this spiritual path, aligning with the spiritual laws of nature, are kind of like living off the grid, wouldn't you say? You know, our choices are in respect for the creative power of mind and how to use it. Because again, everything, our choice has a rippling effect. One of the benefits of this shift in perspective is found within our mindful commitment to connect with the rest of the world, right? Just like living off the grid, we have to find those beautiful, interwoven, complex relationships that we've never looked into before, that are always already present. Rather than sitting back and having the rest of the world come to us, right, into our personal dwelling space. Another benefit of the shift of this perspective is the conscious growth towards living in alignment with our values, right? Not the world's values, but our values as a part of a divine order and interdependent system. Grids are commonly known as infrastructures that connect us to the various utility networks that make our society what it is. Similarly, living off the grid, outside of race consciousness and societal norms, can connect us to the infinite creative intelligent power that is readily available to sustain our mental, emotional, and physical well-being. I think that ultimately in this mindful choice, we are creating a new foundational relationship with ourselves, which I like to call self-sustainability, self-responsibility, self-sufficiency. Rather than adding to the dependency upon and subsequent depletion of man-made resources or others' energy resources for the attainment of our good. Here we're basically taking, as we shift this perspective to being self-sustaining, we're basically taking the leap of living with resources we now use and often take for granted to living as source, using our natural propensity to be the light onto ourselves and others, breaking free, as I said before, from those societal norms and that race consciousness, and obeying the perfect divine order of nature, both inside and out. Now, I know we all want to be independent and just taste that sweetness of freedom, but are we willing to become that self-responsible, self-sustainable individual to attain this aspiration? Well, if wishing made it so, we would all be healthy, wealthy, and wise. You know, there's just such a profound awe and majesty found within the understanding and use of the divine universal law of mind. For life can only work through us and as us. And the law always obeys according to our command. But to make the process complete, we must do our part by believing and accepting, to act as if we already have that which we desire. You know, it takes effort. It does, to switch and shift our perspective. But it's all on the part of the individual relative consciousness and ability to do so. Again, God does not know effort, right? The law doesn't know effort. It just acts according to our command. Isn't it remarkable? Just think about this for a moment. Isn't it remarkable? God obeys us. God responds to the imprint of the energy of our intentional or unintentional thought and reflects back to us what we believe. Isn't that amazing? When we operate in this field of consciousness in this way, in alignment with these complementary forces and functions, the yin and the yang of self-existent original cause, back of all creation, moving within us, we can step away from our ego's willfulness to control and remain safe and its subsequent reaction to make change on the level in which it appears. You know how we try to move the deck chairs, right? On the Titanic. So instead, we can make that quantum leap by trusting our innate need to give and receive love or be loved and be loved to the operation of an immutable and an intelligent law to deliver love's promise. So how is it we adjust our aim so that we no longer expense time and effort and all the other stuff in our wallet, or I like to think about it as replacing the target, right? Moving the deck chairs. How is it we adjust our aim, our perspective, so that we don't spend time out there, right? Choices to replace the target will ultimately create a world of boundaries and separation, because we can never find ourselves fully fulfilled in the thing, but only in the cause, back of the thing. You know, one of the ways to adjust our aim and get clear on what is for our highest and best is through self-honesty. Now, I know it's a challenging path, not because of our tendency towards omissions, justifications, denials, embellishments, right? As we grapple with our truth, but because they're truly is no place to hide, no manner in which we can make ourselves so small that the love of life of spirit cannot make its way to bring us home to that truth of who we are. In this manner of speaking, we must traverse the limited beliefs that have kept us safe, or so we believe, in the darkness, and find its value, find the value of the darkness, so that we can be transformed into the beauty of our whole truth. Every day, and some nights in our dreams, we are at target practice, aren't we? Ever adjusting our aim or points of reference so that they may demonstrate as mindful living and loving. Each of us moving on the path of deepening our own spiritual practice, which opens us to that transformative power of love's vision to heal the unloved parts of ourselves and humanity. So consider for a moment an affirmation of one of my colleagues, Reverend Michelle Wadley. She says, love or God is all there is, and no one can harm me. Everyone is innocent. And the place in us that matters has never been hurt, harmed, or injured in any way. Now, this sentiment flows from spiritual truth. However, Our acts of loving do not always embrace the spiritual truth within the situations of our lives, right? When we love within the measurements of time, space, we are plagued by the sense of endings, of loss, of grasping and holding on, you know, rather than eternality and potentiality, right? Dr. Holmes stated it's impossible for God to know comparisons. He said, love by the very virtue of its nature initiates our choices toward greater livingness, but will remained but an arrow shot off without the stability of its bow. But will be remained an arrow shot off without the stability of its bow, the far reaching of its tree branches without the grounding of its roots. Love, subjective in its desire, passion, and spontaneity, cannot be recognized, known, or experienced, built upon, or expanded without its impersonal creative process, the law of being. You know, I took archery lessons many years ago, and I loved the intense mindfulness it took, right? To intentionally pull back the bow to create just the perfect amount of tension to make its mark on the target. So yes, I would practice adjusting my aim over and over again. And that alone became a worthwhile practice. The strike, hitting the mark, was the icing on the cake. Pulling the bow back, adjusting my aim, was like being mindful in how I was loving. That's how I relate it today. And as I kept my focus on adjusting my aim, I released the arrow, which I use as a metaphor for my highest and best decision, which eventually hit the target or not. But nevertheless, it was released in love and the law, carrying it to its natural logical outcome, whatever target it was I hit. So my love was what adjusted my aim, and the law carried it for my highest and best, and therefore the highest and best of others, no matter what target I hit, right? Even as our focus is to be on love, so too must our faith be in law. And we get distracted. We get distracted when adjusting our aim, don't we? I've got three things I want to share with you. These are things that, for me, have distracted me as I have been growing in my own awareness and mindfulness of being love and loving myself, and therefore knowing that the law will manifest my highest and best. Number one, the belief in either never enough out there or more is never enough. So I'm going to share an illustrative story about a humble stone cutter with you who was never satisfied with life, with the family and the good things he had. He wished he could be like the richest prince in the kingdom. So to his astonishment, he immediately became the prince. Now, relishing his newfound power and prestige, he gazed at the sun, noticing how large and powerful it was. And he wished he were the sun. And he became the sun at once. Well, when a cloud blocked his view of the earth, he wanted to be the large cloud, and he became it. And while enjoying his ability to cause rains all over the earth, he felt something push him, and it was the wind. And he wished to be the wind, and at once he became it. Soon, however, being the powerful wind was not enough for him. And after he had noticed that a giant rock affixed to the earth would not move, no matter how hard he blew. So he wished to become the rock. You got it. And he became it. Now, impervious to the sun and rain and wind, he truly believed he had founded the most powerful position of all. He was the mighty rock. Well, to his disappointment, he soon heard loud tapping noises, and he felt himself being changed. He thought, how can anyone change me? I am the powerful, the omnipotent rock. Well, immediately he looked down and he noticed another humble stonecutter, chisel and hammer in hand, cutting into him. Isn't that a great teaching story? Now, the second thing was not allowing myself to grow into the embodiment of new belief patterns, constantly judging myself in my training wheels, instead of understanding that practice makes it real, right? In our teaching, we say, fake it till you make it. Now, that does apply in metaphysics. You know, we have to cross the divide of time and space in our own belief system to be able to act as if who we want to be is happening now. And yes, we do need to teach what it is we need to learn. But remember, we are teaching from an ancient seed planted within that we're aware of on an unconscious level, which is already whole and complete within itself. And therefore, we are poised to bear fruit in our own awareness and the embodiment of our being. The journey of becoming is where the light shines most strongly. The third thing, I often focus on my difference rather than my spiritual oneness. Here's another illustrative story. It's called The Sun and the Cave, to contemplate this idea for yourself. Once 1,000 years before human beings roamed this earth, the sun began a conversation with a cave. Now, they were not able to understand one another very well. The sun didn't grasp the concept of darkness, and the cave couldn't even imagine what light was. So as an experiment, they decided to visit each other. The cave visited the sun and said, "Oh, how incredible and beautiful this place is. Now I know what light is, what beauty is. Now, sun, it's your turn to visit my world, the world of the caves." So the sun traveled to the earth, gazed inside a few caves and said, "I don't see any difference." That's the end of the story. I don't see any difference. So for me, I don't see any differences in that I see light within. But I do see the diversity in expression, my expression, and I honor it as it is expressed all the same. So these are but three ideas to reflect upon that maybe you can use to continue adjusting your aim, to mindfully let love guide your best decisions. And remember that as you adjust your aim, your wallet gets lighter. And the impact your decisions make through the rippling effect raise everybody up. And eventually, you, me, we will, by the grace we bestow upon ourselves, grow more aware and awake. So lastly, I'm going to ask you to imagine something with me. If you can, close your eyes wherever you are. Imagine with me that you are celebrating your 110th birthday. There you sit, surrounded by several family members, friends, who are there to honor and celebrate your life. And they exclaim that you are the eldest of us, and you have taught many thousands of us, right, how to find the path toward being love. So we've come, joined together, and prepared this gift for you. Please accept it with our love and best wishes. You feel so very touched, as you had not expected nor needed anything like this. But as a gesture of courtesy, you open the ornately wrapped gift in front of everyone. You remove the delicate bow, putting the colorful paper aside and taking the lid slowly off the gift box. Then you look inside. The box was empty. You began to cry tears of joy, realizing that your family and friends had thought long and hard about this gift. Your eyes were still. They welled with tears as you looked at the assembled group of those who loved you, and you say, "Thank you so, so much. It's just what I've always wanted. Nothing. Nothing because there is more than enough, because our existence is enough. Nothing. No thing, because God's gold, a perfect, impersonal, universal law of being, impelled by our awakening and intentional love, is enough." So here's to you, my friends. You are a one of a kind, God is good all the time blessing to be expressed. So be it. And so it is.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, columbiacsl.com, to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@columbiacsl.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.